Hello, and welcome back to another edition of EdChoice Chats.
We have a little bit of a treat today. Some of you may be watching this visually, some of you may only be listening to this, but we are actually all here together. I think normally we are separated by many thousands of miles, but I'm Mike McShane, Director of National Research at EdChoice. We are doing a kind of omnibus polling podcast. Some of you may be familiar over the last couple of years, we would record a monthly tracker podcast where we discuss the results of our monthly tracker poll that we do in concert with Morning Consult. Every month we poll a nationally representative sample of Americans, we oversample parents to get a nationally representative sample of them as well. We poll other interested groups. I think we're going to talk about some results today of our teens polling, but we polled teachers, lots of other folks that are interesting. We've changed the cadence of our podcast publishing a little bit because, to be perfectly honest with you, things don't always change all that much from month to month. And so for those of you, we respect our dedicated podcast listeners, but oftentimes it would be like, yeah, that's kind of May was the same as June and June was the same as July. So we're going to record these podcasts a little bit more infrequently, but hopefully have more to talk to. So what we're really going to be talking about today is kind of the first quarter or so of polling results that we have. And the big question that we're sort of all going to tackle, you notice, for those of you that are watching this, all of my colleagues here have their laptops open that I'm sure are filled with letters and numbers and graphs. I am not similarly situated. I just will probably be playing more of a traffic cop here today. But the big question we're trying to answer is sort of, what do we know now that we didn't know 3 or 4 months ago? How is the condition of public opinion on education? How might that be different from a year ago or 2 years ago or how long we've been doing this? I'm probably going to start by throwing it to you, Allie. You wrote a great blog post from some of our polling last month where you talked about the February blues, or there was definitely some pessimism. Can you maybe talk about what you found there, looking at overall attitudes towards the American education system and sort of how they've been changing over the last couple of months?
Yeah, so we ask a really broad question to get a feeling of how the general mood is towards education. We ask, do you feel that things in K-12 education are generally going in the right direction, or has it got off on the wrong track? And we look at this from the parent perspective and also the general American population. And in February, there was a substantial dip across the board. Parents were feeling less optimistic about the direction of education, and so was especially the general public. We saw that only a third of Americans felt that things were going well in their local school district, and only 22% of Americans think that things are going well across the country in education. And this was a substantial decrease from our January numbers, hence the February blues. So I thought this was particularly notable because it reached a low that we haven't seen since 2020. That was the last time we were seeing this level of pessimism about education. Now, a couple of things were going on in 2020, of course. Just a few. We were dealing with the height of the COVID pandemic, which, of course, had a huge impact on schools in particular. And we were also in an election year. So I think that this is something to keep an eye on this year in particular, is whether the mood towards education is being affected by the event of these political forces in the country.
Yeah, I think that's actually really interesting. Now that we've been doing this polling for long enough, we have all of these sort of events that are happening, and we could try and find potentially some of these correlates. So I was sharing with my colleagues here just before this, back when I was a teacher, February was like the low. It was a low point. You know, you're like, Christmas has ended, but the spring break is still, could be anywhere 4, 6, 8 weeks away. The weather, it's cold, the days are short. There aren't really a lot of breaks in there. So October was kind of like that too, right? Like you'd have Labor Day, and then there was a stretch from like Labor Day to Thanksgiving where you're pretty much in school every single day. So October was some doldrums too. I don't know if we found that in our data. We look back on some of those. But John, is there any stuff in recent polling that's stood out to you?
Yeah, something that I have done, we've got, presumably by the time that this podcast released, we have a new poll of teenagers that has released. People who have been interested in our polling stuff for a long time are aware that we do this a couple times a year. We survey a lot of teenagers nationally representative and ask them about their schooling experience. Pretty obviously, they're the ones most directly affected by everything that's going on, right? And I decided to dive into some of the crosstabs or intersections of different demographics, or how different demographics respond to different types of questions, as opposed to just looking at the overall picture, just for those who are maybe less familiar with polling data and polling terms. We have a question in this polling wave. a series of questions, actually, just asking students whether they agree or disagree that something is going on with their school. Just statements to agree with or disagree with, such as, students behave well in class. Do you agree or disagree? You know, say statements like, I feel safe in school. Statements like, school is a waste of time. So, you know, some positive, some negative. And I tried to see if I could find any differences in what kinds of teenagers are more likely to agree with some kind of statements than others. In general, there was a lot more similarities than there were differences, which surprised me. But where there were differences were overwhelmingly around simply what type of school the kids attended. So, for example, the question on whether they feel like students behave well in class, private school were 20 percentage points more likely to say that students behave well in class than essentially any other category. Everyone else kind of congregated around the average. One other interesting thing, I suppose, here, as long as I'm on that question, is guys were 17 percentage points more likely to think that the class behaved well than girls.
Girls were. So, might have slightly different
definitions, perceptions, or standards. So there might be something fun there. But with a different question, do you feel safe in school? Like, I feel safe in school, I feel safe in class. Private school students, 21 percentage points more likely to say that they feel safe in school than the average. I will say this had a couple of interesting patterns. Kids in rural areas were less likely, 10 percentage points less likely to say that they feel safe in school. And again, everywhere else, you know, suburban, urban, kind of congregated around the average. And LGBTQ students were 23 percentage points below non-LGBTQ students, as far as this question goes. We have a question about, do you feel like school is a waste of time? You know, obviously, ideally, we don't want students to feel like they're wasting time at school. There's something applicable, something to help them in the future, all of that. Private school students, half as likely to say that they feel school is a waste of time than the average teenager. Do you like going to school? Private school students, 8 percentage points more likely than the average to say they like going to school. Charter school students, 12 percentage points more likely than average to say that they like going to school. And I guess last one on this, private school students are 10 percentage points more than the average, more likely to say that they feel respected by their teachers. So again, there's all sorts of different ways that we can split out the data. And if you look at the presentation or the slides that we have on the report, if you look at the crosstabs, you can see all the different ways that we're able to break this data out. And I just thought it was interesting that for all these types of questions that I think a lot of people would ask, like, their kids at the end of the school day, how they feel about how school's going and things like that, the most consistent differentiator was just what school type kids are going to. And I just think it's fascinating. Urban, suburban, not so significant. Yeah. They actually seem to have very similar feelings about school. That surprised me because I think that's counter to a lot of, you know, talk, I guess,
for sure,
these things out there. So yeah, I encourage, as always, I encourage people to kind of dive in and look for patterns, look for differentiators themselves.
Colin, what stood out to you?
So starting in 2024, we asked a question. Now we have 2 months of data on it, and it actually is sort of parallel to your work, Mike, that I'll plug here. Don't think Mike will do it himself. He put himself in the traffic cop role today. But Mike released a really great paper on parent preferences. And so we have a question in our general polling that's not the same as some of the questions that we have in that report, but it is asking, how do parents consider, or what do they know is a strong indicator of a successful school year for their kid? And, you know, coming back from conferences like AEFP, ISCRC, those are a bunch of acronyms, but education research conferences.
Research conferences.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've stuck out to me, and they outright say at conferences, is our test scores really, they matter obviously to researchers for obvious reasons, but how much does that drip down into parents' preferences and how they view a successful school, how they rate a school, which comes in the parent preferences report. It comes in a couple different ways. Parents are not really super enthused about schools that focus more on test scores, and we see that here too. So the question, word for word, is which of the following are most important to know if your child's school year is a successful one? We have 2 months of data, and it's pretty consistent now that child's attitude towards school, so directly from the child, how they feel about school, which kind of touches on John's teen's question, where it's like, are we bored in school? So there's that. That's typically number one. At roughly half of parents are selecting that, which is a big number. And then communication with your child, again, kind of just getting it directly from the child, but also communication with the teacher, hovering around 50%, definitely towards the top. You'll notice there's a split, there's a pretty big drop, and then there's things like report cards, grades on specific tests, quizzes, homework, which are grouped around one-third, maybe two and five parents, 40% of parents are saying that that's important. And then there's another drop between those two metrics and then standardized test scores. It's roughly one in five parents are using standardized test scores to judge whether or not their kid has a successful school year. I think that's interesting, again, just kind of showing the difference and really highlighting the difference on what, when people are looking at education as a whole, they're probably differing in their views on how important standardized test scores are. If you're coming from a research background and you need quantifiable data to look at, standardized test scores are important. But then parents, it's just not as important as, you know, communicating with your child, which may seem obvious, but again, that's just something that we in the research world have to understand. It's like test scores are not the end all be all of this
thing. Yeah, and I think it's funny because researchers and some observers will get upset when they see this reported because they're like, well, you know, there are these disconnects with pandemic learning loss and others, and the test scores are telling us one thing and another. But the thing that always frustrates me is it's like, well, let's just take a step back for a second and think about how standardized tests are administered when you get the results, right? So it's like oftentimes they're given in the spring. You might not get the results until like the next fall when your child is in the next school year.
For sure.
So it's like you have this huge lag. And then at that point, it's like, well, I don't really know what to do with this necessarily. It's October of fifth grade, yep. And you're telling me how my kid did in fourth grade. Well, they're in a new class doing new things. Should they be doing something different? So just the rhythm of the way that these things happen, it probably shouldn't shock us that parents are like, yeah, I talk to my kid every day. Yep. Like, my kid's teacher sends me stuff regularly, so I weight that higher because that's what's actually at hand. And it's like, totally. if you like standardized tests, and look, and I'm not like a standardized test hater, I think they should be used, but we should be thinking about how can we make them more useful to people? How can you get the results faster? How can you get them in an actionable way where a parent could go to their kid's teacher and say, hey, here's what I'm seeing from this. Mm-hmm. What can we do about it? But as long as that's standardized tests are not going to provide those things for parents, we cannot be shocked when they weight them lower than the other sources of information that they have.
No, it's not shocking. To me, the gap, and I'd like to see if we're going to continue asking this question, if the gap, you know, continues to be at this 50% to 20% type of range. But yeah, I mean, exactly right. The information stream of what's happening in the school, as a parent, it's constant from a kid, a teacher. You can get that pretty much anytime you want. The fact that you do have to wait sometimes months for standardized test results, that undoubtedly has an effect here. So yeah, I think that's one thing. And again, I like you, I'm not going to say standardized tests are useless and we should do away with them. It is just kind of, we need to take it with a grain of salt. It's not everything.
Yeah.
Especially not
and
parents.
I think it's also true, and you know, it's probably well known, standardized tests only capture a certain portion of what's going on in schools.
Exactly.
We've been asking questions about some of these other things that are happening in schools, and I think we've been finding some really interesting results. We've been asking questions about bullying. We've been asking questions about violence in schools. Does anyone want to talk about that? Because I think these are things, again, that are not necessarily captured by some of our traditional metrics of school performance. But if you put yourself in a student's shoes or in a parent's shoes, you're like, oh, this is actually massive in the way that it shapes our experiences of school every day. So what do we know about sort of bullying in school, violence in schools, perceptions of all of that? I don't know if anyone wants to tackle that first.
I have one quick one.
Hey, go for it.
So we asked a question we've been asking for a while about school switching. So, and just some baseline on that, one in five parents are, around one in five, sometimes one in four parents are saying that they are switching their child. And that is, you know, not the traditional move from grade school to high school, middle school to high school type of, I'm sorry, grade school to middle to high school. So these are switching out of the typical rhythm.
Going from one school to another
school. Exactly, yep. So going from one school to another school, and we ask reasons why. Typically, when we first started asking, academic needs were not being met was one of the highest reasons. But as this question has, we've gotten a little bit more data on this question, bullying and then excessive stress or anxiety. But bullying is typically number one now. Wow. So, I mean, it's definitely a metric where parents are judging whether or not the school's doing its job, but it's also a metric that parents are relying on when it comes to reasons why they're switching. Sure. So it's a driver for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild to see that as number one.
Yeah.
Right? That this is clearly, and what is it, is about, did you say it was 30?
Roughly 30% of parents, one third of parents are listing bullying as their top reason.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It is.
Yeah, along with that, we also ask parents why they pick the school that they choose for their child. And this is another example where we see a big gap between private school parents and district school parents, the same phenomenon that John was talking about earlier. Private school parents are much more likely to say that they're choosing their school for its safe environment.
Mm.
So the idea that we have a lot of parents that have to consider bullying, well, we know what they're doing. They're looking for alternatives, places where their kids are going to have a safer environment, where they can flourish in a different schooling environment. So the fact that we see that reflected in this other question, I think, just gives you more evidence of the seriousness of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that we've tried to ask for a couple waves with our team polling specifically now is student absenteeism. You spend 2 seconds on any kind of education news source, you know that this is a kind of an issue that schools are facing that has just kind of proliferated since COVID, essentially, and trying to figure out what's changed. Some state legislatures are trying to figure out what to do with it. Anyway, so we ask teens about it, and we find out that teens are actually very willing to self-admit that they miss school and that their friends miss school and things like that. So that's something that you can identify. But then we also ask in our teen polling to just kind of check off reasons that they have missed school over the course of like the last school year, this school year. And 7%, which might not feel like a lot, but that's more than 1 out of 20, say that they have missed school specifically out of bullying or safety concerns. So that is a teen who has identified, I stayed home because I did not feel safe or comfortable going to school because of the effect that my peers will have on my sense of mental well-being,
yeah, sure,
physical well-being, all those kinds of things, which is not ideal. And for so many school changes to occur for those kinds of needs, as opposed to thinking academics first kind of thing, which is what I think a lot of people maybe assumed, what I would have assumed would have been the highest, going into these questions, is really concerning. I mean, there's also broader safety concerns as well. We started asking a lot of questions about school safety after a couple very tragic shootings that happened last year, and maybe without too much surprise, or maybe to the surprise of some, just pretty consistently teens are labeling gun safety and gun issues as their number one political issue, just a clearly like head above any other issue that we bring up. And that's been pretty consistent. They are less likely than their parents to say that they feel like there's an imminent threat of a violent intruder entering their school. That's not saying much, because half of parents have a serious concern about it, and only, air quotes, a third of teenagers are very or extremely concerned about a violent intruder entering their school. You can't really learn very well.
Did we ask a question too about, maybe it was in the parents' poll, about like a violent incident in school?
Mm-hmm.
Like how many, if memory serves me correct, was it something like 30% or around there of parents reporting that they knew of a violent incident in their child's school? Am I right to think that?
Yeah, it's ringing a bell. I think it was a question about, has there been like a physical altercation, basically? Like, I think it would include stuff like, have students gotten into a physical fight?
But I mean, it's sort of, what I see in like, what you all were saying, and what's in here is this, we imagine this sort of Venn diagram almost of these things of like, students who are being bullied, students who don't feel safe, students' various concerns that they're having, all sort of interlocking and overlapping on one thing. And if you think about where any child sort of fits within that diagram, they might be in only one of them, or they could overlap in multiple ones of them, and the compounding effect that that could have on their education, which is just like, oh, hey, I may not be worried about, like, violence, but people are, you know, there's cyberbullying or something that's going on with that, which can make a child's life absolutely miserable. Or it could be both. Like, I'm worried about violence in my school and online.
So it was 31% of school parents have seen or heard about at least one violent incident. Mm-hmm. And so, that right there.
It's a huge number.
It's a massive number. But there's a massive number also when it comes to teen safety in schools that John brought up earlier, but I mean, I feel like it's worth noting again. And it's hard to say only 57% in a lot of circumstances, but only 57% of kids agree with the statement that they feel safe in school. You're telling me
almost half of kids.
43% of kids are like, no, I don't think
cannot
so.
Simply say, which they would think is a pretty low bar, yeah. Right? Of just safety,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that could be bullying, that could be a violent incident, a violent intruder. I mean, it could be many.
I just think that this is like, it's such a sleeper issue when we talk about schooling in America. And again, anybody who knows teachers or are related to teachers or others, one of the things that I found fascinating over the course of really kind of in the post-pandemic times is the degree to which talking about classroom behavior, safety, and those things has really ratcheted up. Yeah. Like, you know, teachers would frequently say, you know, the hours aren't great, or parents are annoying, or the pay is not great. And this is pretty standard, and it happens across these things. And I think there's, you know, there's truth to all of those things. But I just have just noticed anecdotally the increasing way in which folks are starting to say, like, kids are out of control, or it's like the flip side, or we have this chronic absenteeism problem. So we have students that are just not coming to school. That's one tranche of them. We have other students that are coming to school, obviously, and committing violent acts. And then you have other kids that are caught up in all of this, both from the effects of chronic absenteeism, where, like, if you're the actual kid that's going to class and some, you know, 10 to 30% of your classmates are sort of attending on a rotating basis, which has to be disruptive, right? Mm-hmm. And then I just don't think we should be surprised when we see these problems, right? If you have students, chronic absenteeism, students coming in on a rotating basis, kids are behind, who misbehaves in a classroom, right? The kids who are super ahead and the kids who are super behind, yep. Right? The kids who are, like, engaged in the class material, they are behaving, right? Because they're being challenged and they're focused and whatever. The kids who already know the stuff are bored, and so they misbehave with one another. And the kids who feel they're so behind, they're never going to learn any of this, misbehave, right? Yep. And this chronic absenteeism problem that's tied into that seems to me a perfect recipe for this. Yeah. And so we shouldn't be surprised when these other things start to correlate with it. It's like, oh, wow, we're seeing more bullying, we're seeing more violence, we're seeing more disruption. It's like, yeah, because you got a bunch of kids whose education is in constant tumult.
Yeah, there was a long period where education was so asynchronous between kids in the same grade. I mean, to your point, that makes it fewer kids are on the same page in a classroom. Right?
And another concerning piece of the puzzle here is parents may not necessarily be aware of the absenteeism problem or the extent to which it's happening. We just asked this question in March about how often their kids are missing school, and 1 in 4 parents say that their child has missed more than 5 days of school this year. But that means you have 75% approximately of parents who say that their child has only missed 0 to 5 days of school, and we know that the numbers are higher.
That's not true. Yes.
So it's concerning that parents are not necessarily aware of the full severity of the absenteeism situation.
Yeah.
They also might not be aware of the situation in terms of how the school's handling mental health, bullying, violent behaviors. I mean, when we ask parents, granted they are not in the school every day, presumably, how they feel their child's school addresses the following, you know, bullying, violent behaviors, mental health, it's roughly 50% of parents are saying that they're handling it extremely or very well. You ask teens, and it's a whole other story. It's like a third of teens are saying it's being handled well. So I'm more inclined to trust teens on this one. Granted, usually you aren't trusting teens over parents in a lot of situations, but when it comes to
what's actually
going on in school and how they feel, I'm going to trust teens there. It's probably closer to a third.
And it's the subtle stuff, or like the more subtle stuff where teens are disagreeing with parents more, right? Like they're kind of on the same page when it comes to
broader general stuff,
like gun policy and things like that, but with the more, I don't know if subtle is the right word, but, you know, you kind of, if you're there, you know it when you see it kind of thing, right? Yeah. Bullying, you know, 13-point gap, you know, this most recent go-around. Violent behaviors, 15-point gap, the most recent go-around. mental health issues, 12-point gap this go around. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a disconnect between what teens are sharing with their parents or differing degrees of optimism about what those schools are doing.
We could do a whole episode just on the disagreements between parents and teens on questions like this, because they pop up every time we do a teens report. It's really interesting.
So the last topic I want to cover before we wrap this up is technology. Obviously, in this last quarter, if we just think of the sort of headlines across the country, huge stuff happening around AI and large language models, whether that's ChatGPT, you know, Google's Gemini, which had all sorts of hilarious things. Claude is the other one, yeah. Anthropic, or however you say that company is. You know, they're doing all of those things. I mean, part of it, I just like love these. I love these stories because it's like all of these engineers carefully making these things, and then you just like unleash them on humanity, and it's like in Jurassic Park, like life finds a way. Mm-hmm. It's like if you just put like a million people who want to break these things, like they'll totally do it. But then there's also, so this has been happening. There's obviously been a lot of conversation about that and the relation that AI and things have for education. I saw like a thing that just went viral on social media recently. I think it was a college professor who offered like a ChatGPT amnesty and was like, look, if you use ChatGPT to help write your paper, if you admit to it now, I won't like do it. And I think of like the 25 students in his class, 23 admitted to it, which is like on one level, it's like, God bless you for admitting it. But it's also sort of troubling. At the same time, there's obviously been this huge conversation about TikTok, the divestment bill that could temporarily sort of limit its use in the United States. I thought it was really interesting watching the CEO of TikTok testify before Congress and saying like, well, do your kids use TikTok? And he's like, well, actually, I live in Singapore, so it's illegal for them to use it. And they're like, he's like, well, if you lived in America, would you? And they're like, you know, he had all this stuff about, you know, there's the teen setting on it or whatever. And it's like, maybe some people are doing that. Yeah, maybe some people are doing that. Maybe they aren't. But look, so broadly speaking, again, with all of this stuff happening in the backdrop, whether it's with AI, whether it's with TikTok and other social media platforms, what do we kind of know about people's opinions about technology, AI, social media, and how that relates to education?
So, speaking of disconnects between teenagers and parents, something where there is agreement, actually, like a surprising amount of agreement, is the relationship between social media and mental health, like, more or less, right? We're talking like within, you know, a handful of percentage points. Teenagers and parents actually seem to be kind of on board with how social media impacts like relationships and mental health and self-confidence and things like that, where, you know, some people think it's overall great, some people think it's overall not so great, depending on the specific question, but there's like a fairly decent spread there. Where there's disconnect is, you know, whether that should impact what kind of access teens have to technology. Or you ask teenagers how old should kids be before they start using social media, you know, their average is about 3 years younger than parents say, which is actually pretty significant. You know, we asked this a few times now, parents and teachers, what kind of cell phone policy do you think your school should have? And we found that actually a, for me, shockingly large amount of parents were very cool with some kind of policy, like official policy, banning cell phones from schools or at least from classrooms. Mm-hmm. And actually like 91% of teenagers are like, yes, I should have a cell phone in school. So, you know, wow. I don't know how much power they have in resistance or anything like that. I really don't know. But there's a disconnect there. There's also another question that we have where I think like one out of five teenagers say that all of their kids are all of the kids in their school, all of their classmates, I forget how it's phrased, use cell phones in the classroom. So, you know, I don't know if there's, you know, there's probably, you know, one holdout somewhere, but it's still. So I think it's interesting that there actually are somewhat similar perceptions about what social media does to kids, but teenagers just have a stronger sense of like, but this is just kind of how you do life. I think sometimes we forget too. You know, kids who are in high school now, what year would high school seniors now have been born in? What, 2006?
Seniors,
2006. Yeah. 2006, right? So like that was when YouTube, that was the year that YouTube started becoming a thing, right? These kids have never known a world where social media was not incredibly important every day of their life. So Yeah, I have no idea the degree to which that should actually impact any of our policy decisions or things like that, but, you know, I don't know if teenagers really have a concept of what it's like to not have constant access to all of the information in the world at any given point. So, I don't know. There's just interesting disconnects there, even though teenagers know there are impacts on social media and your self-confidence, impacts of having social media and how you perform in school, all of those kinds of things. There's a recognition of it, but also that's just life.
Yeah,
that's kind of what they say.
I think that's a really important point, is when you grow up in a culture completely saturated by social media and always having your cell phone on you no matter what, being cut off from that feels like being cut off from being able to socialize in a really real way. So I think that there's a bit of a, with these results, we're seeing a bit of an outcry against that. How could you take our cell phones from us, is the resounding response. But I think that, the difference between the parent results is really huge. I mean, 9 out of 10 teens think they should have the cell phone in the class. Well, 1/3 of parents think that they should have cell phones in class. So I think eventually this is going to come to a head.
Yeah, right.
We're going to have to see these things reconciled. And when we have our teacher results in about a month or two, we'll be able to compare interesting numbers on how teachers are seeing cell phones in classrooms as well.
Yeah, I can't imagine them being super psyched about it, but I'm guessing they're going to be closer to parents or even beyond parents, but that'll be super interesting.
Yeah, to piggyback off Allie's point, so we have 38% of parents saying that their kids should have phones in the class. It's like 2/3 of teens are saying that they feel that way when it comes to inside the classroom. And then when we ask them about their classmates, which to me is kind of like, we're moving from the hypothetical to now what's actually happening. So it's how many of your classmates use their phones in class? Like John said, 1 in 5, 20% are saying every kid, which is nuts. You expand that to most and then some of your classmates using your cell phone in class, it goes to 77%. So whether or not parents feel like kids should have their cell phones in class, and like Allie said, I'm really interested to see what teachers say, because they can either corroborate what the teens are saying or they can hold them back a little bit, and maybe it's not that many, maybe it's not 77%, but yeah, there's a disconnect there. Teens are definitely feeling like they should have it in class. I mean, they could say it for safety reasons, but I mean that, and you can't fight that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what teachers will say there, because there's another disconnect.
Absolutely. Well, I realized when I started this podcast, I introduced myself, but not y'all. I was so thrown off because I'm used to like seeing all of you on video screens and sort of going around. So we're actually here together, and I'm not used to like the camera here. So I'm just like, well, obviously, if people are watching this, they know who all of us are. But that might not necessarily be the case. So my colleagues, Colin, Allie, John, thank you so much for doing this today. Thank you for so prepared. And I think you also, you know, put in some nice teasers for some future polling that's coming out that I think people should know about. We're going to continue looking at teens, teachers, and have these opportunities to do these kind of interesting correlations between where are teens and parents agreeing and disagreeing, where are teens and teachers, where are parents and teachers, and looking at all those sorts of things. So you can always go to our website where we put all of this, edchoice.morningconsultintelligence.com, that has both the kind of top line findings. You go up to the tabs at the top, there's one that says resource downloads, that does the awesome PowerPoint presentation that the Morning Consult puts out every month. It also, like John was digging into, the cross tabs that are in the center there. So if you're interested in particular demographic groups and how they answer these sorts of things, has the full, exactly the questions we ask and the order that we ask them. Those are all on there as well. But thanks for your great preparation and insightful thoughts. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to those of you who may be watching as well. It's normally not something that we say, but thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And I look forward to chatting with all of you again on another edition of Ed Choice Chats.